Hi, and welcome to episode 89 of Fully Boosted, the War Machine Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Brad.
I'm Pete.
And today, you want to introduce yourself? Fine.
I'm going to introduce myself. Fine. I'm Matt.
We don't do that. That's not how we do it.
It's fine. It's fine. It's done now. Sung, you might as well introduce yourself, too. This is all, Matt ruined everything.
Hey, and I'm Sung Soo. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No problem. Thanks for joining us on this clusterfuck of an episode.
I'm enjoying Sung Soo much more than I'm enjoying Matt right now.
Oh, shots fired.
I'm just saying, Sung Soo hasn't fucked up his intro.
That's true. To be fair, he didn't attempt one, which I'd be curious to see as
Which means he didn't fuck it up.
Fine.
If you listen to Sung Soo and I, you know he's the professional and I'm the lovable clown.
That's true. Yeah,
lovable. All right.
So, we've got Matt and Sung on. They were just at the WITC, the Wisconsin Team Championship, which they won along with Tim Banky. Tim cannot be here, but congrats, guys, on the win, and thanks for coming on and chatting with us.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yep. Since they didn't want to plug themselves, I'll do it. You can catch Sung on Tangential with Sung Soo, also on Muse on Minis. And did you guys ever decide on a name for the cast with you, Matt, and Brandon?
We did. We're going with The Forge. We'll be recording pretty soon here. We'll have a few episodes that we put out at the same time. We're really excited about it. Sung, do you have anything you want to say?
No, you'll find us on Muse on Minis. We'll be setting up a Facebook page shortly. But if you follow me at CO Wargaming on Facebook right now, you can stay up to date. Thanks for the plug, guys.
No problem.
Good question for you, Matt, since you're in Quebec. How does The Forge translate into French?
I believe it's just Le Forge.
I hope it would be.
You could see that by my French expertise of not speaking French.
I thought you did know French.
No.
Well, that's not as exciting as you knowing French. Anyway, so I'm sure everybody knows by now that you guys brought a triple Kador team to this event, and we wanted to talk about your composition and basically that event in general and how that went for you. So do you want to start with the decision to go triple Kador?
I think Sung will give us the intro here because he was actually the one that led this charge.
Sure.
I don't know that I want that responsibility.
Too late.
Or
ball's in your court.
Matt, Tim, and I were just talking one night, and I floated the idea of, hey, guys, did we maybe want to go triple Kador? And it was one of those times you mentioned something, but you're kind of joking, but then one of your buddies takes it, like, really seriously and gets really excited, so you know you're screwed as soon as you say it. Soon as the words came out of my mouth, yeah, Matt gets excited. Tim's basically, like, Tim's version of fuck yeah, and that's how we did it. And then it was, like, a 4 or 5 hour phone call that night, Matt, to figure it all out.
I don't think that's really giving a fair summary of what happened there. You underlined the point where I was the voice of reason, all right? I was the voice of reason in that chat. Sung was like, we should do triple Kador. And Tim's like, I'm 80% in. And I was like, hold on, guys. This is practice for WTC. Maybe we shouldn't do triple Kador. And Tim's like, I understand what you're saying, and I hear you. But let's do triple Kador.
I'd like to point out that Matt asked me to tell a story, then tells me I told the story wrong and says it anyway, mm-hmm. which is why I don't understand why Matt just didn't tell the story to begin with. But go ahead. You were the voice of reason. First time for everything.
So you invited this man to be on a podcast with you permanently.
Yeah.
It's because I don't like to talk. On my podcast, if you listen, I say like 8 things the entire podcast, and it's an hour-long podcast. It works.
So, Grant, Pete, I think we should just talk to Sung this entire time and make Matt listen.
We can do that.
You're Brandon, lucky with Brandon and Matt that it's only an hour long. So
there's a lot of editing.
You know that is like 5 hours worth of recording, right?
It's gotta be.
Yeah, I just turn the record button on. I walk away. They just talk. I come back. We cuddle up. We have a podcast.
Grant doesn't edit shit, so be careful what you say. It's all staying in.
That's true.
we did one recording, and we recorded for 3 hours. It was great, and then we talked for another 2 hours afterwards. It was amazing.
It's awesome.
So to start us off real quick, it was a 4-round event, right?
Yeah, 4-round event.
I saw Tim was 4, you guys were both 3-1, is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
So was it more the strength of Kador that carried you to the victory, or was it riding Tim?
I like to think of it as somewhere in the middle. Tim propped us up on his shoulders. He picked 2 of his favorite lists to play, and we put our saddles on and rode him to first place.
Well, no, let's talk about the list, because you guys did, I mean, and anyone can, some of this was discussed in the Kator chat already, but, I mean, you guys took three Winter Guard lists and then kind of divvied them up based upon comfort level with the list, right?
Yeah, so...
I think that's an important thing to talk about real quickly here, about how the lists were kind of divvied up. In the interest of full disclosure, I did virtually none of the list creation. I hadn't really played Kator. Do you guys say Kator or Kator, actually, while we're on the subject?
I say Kator, but, you know.
Kator, I think, is the East Coast pronunciation.
if you look in the rule book, it is pronounced Kator. There is a pronunciation guide.
Oh, get out of here, you fucking...
Right, but that actually didn't exist when I started playing in Mark 1. I know that came around after the fact. I believe that came around in the Forces book. Anyway, I was just curious. But that night, we were talking about it, and they basically made the lists for me. And they gave me the Training Wheels lists, I think. Strong lists, a little bit more straightforward to play, and lists that I could more easily wrap my head around. I joked on Twitter that if I'm the worst person on a team, it's a pretty good team. But I meant that honestly. I'm not as good a player as Matt or Tim is. I have no shame in admitting that. And the list focus and the kind of the roles and things that I would handle and tackle were created with that in mind. So I do think one of the important things when creating a list and evaluating a team and your pairing is to be pragmatic and honest with player skill. I think that's very important to know where your pitfalls are going to be, know where your downfalls are going to be, and know what you can and can't spin up on in a reasonable amount of time.
So what were the lists that they put you on? I am on the website, and we're saying it for people listening that aren't on, but if you want to follow, the event ID on Conflict Chamber is 411.
Sure, I'll go ahead and run through the list real quick, and then I'm sure Matt can jump in and kind of explain why he created the list this way. So the first list is Vlad 1 Rockets, which actually means Winter Guard Command. Command spelled with a K. That's Vlad 1 with a Victor, a Goblin Tinker, Grigovich, a Widowmaker Marksman, an Artillery Captain, Ariana and Holt with their accompanying Valachev, and then a Max Winter Guard Infantry with Max Rockets and the Standard and Officer. Two Min Rifle Corps, each with Max Rockets and a Mortar.
Yep, that's right. That's the Vlad 1 Winter Guard Command List. So the key components of that list is that it's a Winter Guard Command List. So you can kind of break it down to do cool things, but at the end of the day, you resolve games by casting Signs of Importance and shooting things with rockets. You have some flex in that you have access to flare to solve stealth. You have access to fire continuous effects to solve a lot of really high def or high armor infantry, or like attrition slayers, stuff like that. You have access to Ion and Holt to solve for magic weapons, plus damage fix as well. So with Signs of Importance, the ability to aim most of the game, Kovnik Joseph Grigorovich, and Flare and Kiss, you have like a solve for every stat value. And so you just focus on attrition and kind of just shoot things until they're dead and worry about losing on scenario the next turn.
And then you handed him a Vlad 2 list as the off list.
Vlad 2 Armored Core, which I'll lead with, was a ton of fun to play. I really enjoyed playing that list. If you haven't gotten a chance to take Armored Core out, I really enjoyed playing this Vlad 2 list. I felt like I had a ton of options and a ton of game, even in matchups where I quote-unquote wasn't favored. So it's Vlad 2. It's a Devastator and a Kodiak. It's double Dracoon, however you want to say that, a Kovnik, two Strike Tankers, two Suppression Tankers, or Oppression Tankers, depending on where you come from, Saxon Orc, a unit of Chaozy Eliminators, full Demo Corps with the guy who killed Rocky, and then full Shock Troopers with their officer.
So interesting components of this list. It gives Vlad a ton of really good feat targets, and he delivers the army in a way that you don't expect him to deliver the army, because Demo Corps is innately very durable and has really good guns, so it attritions well on the way in, and then once it's in, it punches up really well. So Vlad kind of allows you to problem solve with boosts. His feat solves both speed, hit, damage, durability, pretty much everything that's an issue for the list. It just makes everything better. And what ends up happening with that list is because of how Vlad's toolkit works and because of how flexible Armored Core is, it allows it to pivot really well. So like approaching the sweeper pivot kind of paradigm, Rockets are your sweepers. They enable you to kind of slam dunk matchups, while Vlad 2 is your pivot, where it allows you to play into matchups that your opponent wouldn't think you're able to play into, and that seem difficult for Rockets to slam dunks.
Was there any matchup that you had to keep Sung safe from?
So there was a lot of matchups where Sung didn't feel confident, and like part of that is, you know, not being... You mean having, what, 10 games, 20 games with Kator at most? And, like, part of that was, you know, playing the faction for 2 weeks before the event. There was no matchups where we had to protect him, nor could we really protect him from any bad matchups.
Yeah, I do think it's important, Matt, if you want to take a minute or if someone wants to take a minute and go over how the pairing process in this works. It was my first time playing in one done exactly this way, and it is much harder to, quote-unquote, hide someone.
Is this the European style three cards?
German style.
German style. Yeah, there it is.
So how it works is there's three tables labeled 1, 2, or 3. Both teams roll a die, and whoever wins the roll puts the first card face down. The cards have player names on them. Puts the first card face down on table 1 or 3. Then the second team puts a card down on either table 1 or 3, the opposite of whichever one the first team chose. Then you get the other team's cards and you pick matchups for the player you've already put down. So it's, you can guarantee one good matchup for your team, kind of. So like a lot of our team strategy in this was that we would put down Tim first on a table that was favored for him and then get him a matchup he felt like he could win. And, like, by getting him a good matchup, it shielded us from other matchups. So what would happen is after you pick that first matchup, then you only have 2 cards left, right? Because your opponent chose one and you chose one. So 4 out of the 6 total cards have been used, and the remaining 2 cards go down on the middle table. So you're able to kind of pick your matchups, but not protect players. You just end up playing whatever you get put on. And, like, I think that's a very important thing, is that this isn't a 5-man WTC format team event where you're able to shield people from matchups. This is where people will purposely put you in your worst possible matchup.
So some of the criticism that I've seen from your guys' run is that this is a team format and that you're able to shelter people and pick matchups and, you know, do hard dodges because of the format. So your counter is, no, can't do it.
Correct. You literally cannot dodge anything.
Yeah, I mean, we played a tournament in this format, and I would agree with that.
Yeah. Now, to your earlier question, Pete, there are definitely matchups where we felt a person's pairing or their skill set was favored in a matchup, and we definitely tried to maximize that as we did anything. But there wasn't anything where, like, 100% can't handle this, need to pivot off of it, need to get someone else in there. And as Matt said before, it's almost impossible to hide some from a matchup. You end up playing the Princess Bride game. I know that you know that I don't want to see this matchup, so I drop this person on that table. And sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't work out. In the final rounds, the team we played against, not to get ahead of ourselves, got every matchup that they wanted. Blake told me that as we went to the table. And Matt and I think we had one matchup in that we wanted coming out of that. Does that sound right, Matt?
No, we got all 3 that we wanted to.
Oh, and they had all 3 they wanted? That's crazy.
That's one of those, I'm not trapped in here with you, you're trapped in here with me type of situation.
So we can go over it round by round, but our strategy the whole kind of weekend, or the whole day, I should say, was to get our best players matchups that were like medium for them, but like basically put our best players in matchups we were confident they could win, and then... do it that way. And like that was all about judging player skill and like list interactions and table interactions. And we can go over that round by round. It'll be a little bit easier.
Sure.
Yeah, but before Grant, before we begin, I want to finish the list.
Yeah, me too.
Selections.
Okay, sure. So I'll go over my list. I played Old Witch 2 Winter Guard Command, Old Witch with a Victor, triple Min Rifles with Rockets, Ayana and Holt, double Mortar, Widowmaker Marksman, Capitan, the Artillerist guy. Sounds like everything I had on my list.
Battle Mechanics, Ayana and Holt.
Yeah, Min Battle Mechanics, Ayana and Holt with Valachem, sorry.
And then Joe.
And Joe, yes. Yep. And then my second list was a Butcher 1 Armored Core list with Butcher 1, Rune, Juggernaut, Max Shock Troopers UA, Max Demo Corps UA, double suppression tanker, double strike tanker, single Dracoon, single Kovnik, Saxon Orc.
Chaos Eliminators and a Tannis.
And Chaos Eliminators. Yep. And a Tannis, yes. So I'm always missing stuff when I list off lists.
Go ahead. So before we move on to Tim's, you want to talk about, I mean, I think the Winter Guard command list is pretty common. You want to talk about the Butcher One list at all?
Yeah, so like I'll just touching on Old Witch 2 Rockets for a second. Mm-hmm. Old Witch 2 Rockets is a list I have a lot of experience with. It's something I'm very comfortable with. I played it at War Machine Weekend. I love that list. It's fantastic, and the Victor getting buffed only made it better. A lot of people going into the event and like on Facebook and some podcasts and stuff talked about how Grimkin was a really bad matchup for Kador. At Captain Con, I played Old Witch 2 Rockets, and I beat 3 Grimkin players. At War Machine Weekend, I played two Grimkin.
Hold on, wait a minute. Was it all Bump in the Night?
No, it was all Dark Menagerie.
So they had Gremlin Swarms.
Yes.
And this is before the Spriggan changes.
Correct. Why are the Spriggan changes relevant?
How did you see through the stealth?
I didn't. I just made my mortars magical and shot them with mortars.
How were they magical?
With Ion and Holt.
Wow.
And my objective.
Well, this is all new to me.
So key components of that list and why it's good into Grimkin. I wouldn't say it's great into Grimkin, but it makes every matchup a game, I'll say. You can play really wide and are able to aim for almost 100% of the game. Your mortars with magical are able to solve gremlin swarms. The Victor, with its AoE 5 pie plate of flare or fire, depending on what your target is, allows you to solve for things like artificial deviation or magical gremlin swarms. You make it magical with Iona and Holt, you shoot a pie plate at a gremlin swarm with a Capitan giving your artillerist, then you boost damage rolls and kill the gremlin swarm with boosted damage rolls. That's how I won those games. And, you know, as much as Grimkin have a lot of solves for rockets, they don't have enough that over 3 turns you can't kill heavies. All of that said, my Butcher One Armored Core list, it's specifically designed to beat, it was my solve for Armored Core, for Animag, for Primal Terrors. This is obviously before the event. We were like, Primal Terrors is the strongest list in the game. It's going to be the most popular list in the game. We need to solve it. So I was like, Butcher One, just like, you walk up, you suppression tankers with feet turn, you just kill everything on the table, and then you're great. It's specifically designed to be good there. I'm confident I had games there. Rune collecting souls is super strong there. And then also Butcher One allows me to flex into Crix really well, where Rune's a magical weapon, and Wraith Engine can't really push up into a Fury Feet Rune, even under Scar 1 Feet turn, because it just dies, and that's bad. And also, Suppression Tankers are really good at killing Banes. So I felt really confident that I had an answer to every matchup that existed. Whether that's like they were good answers or just allowed me to play a game, that's fine. Old Witch also was my drop into Signar, as was Armored Core. Both of them are great there. Windstorm plus Rockets is a good solve for pretty much everything, and AoE 5s of Fire are good into AoE 3, I heard. With all of that said, the Butcher One list just has a lot of damage output and can trade up very aggressively, and that's why I like it. The next lists were Tim's lists. These he made himself. Quick, Matt,
Before we get on from that, something I'd like to point out, and we talked about in a little bit of the podcast pregame, is if you look at Matt and I's list, they're extremely similar, but they play very differently. And one of the things that Matt talked about early is just tweaking something like a caster, a solo, something like that, can really change your list and your options on things. So if you are stuck on something, whether you're playing Kador or another faction, a small change, even like a caster, a couple solos, your unit layout, can make a big difference into the game you have, into the matchups. All those things Matt listed that Old Witch is strong into, Vlad might not be. But Vlad has a whole slew of things where he's stronger into because of the presence and signs importance and things like that. I just wanted to hit on that real quick before we went to Tim's list that while similar, isn't nearly as identical as yours and I's were.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, so Sung's 100% correct there. Changing little things in a list is a very good way to alter matchups. So let me get into Tim's list here. He played Zirkova 1. Grant, you just want to run through the list real quick? I don't have them
in front of me. I got you, buddy. So it was Zirkova 1 in Legion of Steel with triple Juggernaut as the battle group, 2 Iron Fang Kovniks, Sophia Skarova, Ragman, Kovnik Markov, the Great Bears, Max Pikeman with UA, and double Min Ulans. And then he paired that with Butcher 3 Winter Guard Command, with Ruin, a Spriggan, and a Wardog, Grigorovich, a Widowmaker Marksman, Alexei and the Risen, a Field Gun Crew, Min Infantry with 3 Rockets and UA, a Mortar Crew, and then double Min Rifer Corps with 3 Rockets.
Yeah, so what you'll notice about Tim's lists is that they are very different than what Sung and I played. Tim built these lists himself. He tested them himself, and he feels confident in them. I like them a lot. He definitely got some input from other players on them, and you know, they're his creations, and they're amazing. If you notice, the first thing that's about that Zarkova list is that it's in Legion of Steel. He gets to deliver pikemen and trade multiple turns of pikemen attrition and juggernaut attrition and just play a really long game that punishes his opponents for small mistakes. You could say that this is a pivot list. Then he paired it with Butcher 3 Rockets. This list has a lot of strength to it. It has Rockets, which are a sweeper, like sweeper-ish component. He has Butcher, which is just, I kill your army. And he has a lot of like really straightforward components of that, including his battle group. This is a sweeper. If he gets to drop it into a good matchup, he slam dunks it. And if he doesn't, he gets to play Zarkova, which has a lot of cool flex pieces, including the min unit of Ulan, the double min unit of Ulans, which gives him a lot of flexibility in just attritions well, scenarios well, and trades up very aggressively because of precision strike on the pikemen, comboed with crit knockdown from the Ulans. Taking out Cortexes and then, like, crit-knocking something down is a real sad day. And then, like, repoing 5 away, or 3 away with Ulans, 5 away with Pikemen. Super cute.
Real quick, if you do... Tim did discuss this a little bit on the Kador Facebook group, so if you do want to hear more about his take on his list, he did a little bit of question-answering on there, so...
And he'll definitely do a better job explaining this than I will. Additionally, you can find him on Arcanassist. I believe he just put up a Butcher 3 game recently, or he's going to be putting up one. It'll be give a really good example of these games. Sung, do you have something you want to add on here?
No, the Butcher 3 game is live. If you remember the Patreon, if you're not, you'll have it, I think, in a week. So yep. His Patreon just gives you access to content a little faster. It's only $1 per pledge. I hate to plug something else in this podcast, sorry. But Tim obviously wanted to be here, just couldn't make it due to some scheduling reasons. He was a large part of the reason we went so well. And the one other thing I do want to say about Tim is, leading up to the event, Tim only got 4 practice games in. And Tim kept telling me, I lost all 4, but that's like the best possible solution. And I'm like, I don't understand, Tim, but I trust you.
Yeah, yeah. Some Rain Man stuff. Like, I don't get it, but all right, if you think that's good, then fine.
Yeah, so, I mean, losing is the best way to make sure that you don't lose in the same way, right?
Sure. I mean, I personally, if I played a list 4 times and lost all 4 heading into an event, I just would not have that confidence.
So those were our lists. I'm going to dive right into the event itself.
Real quick, just hedging on that. So Tim said something on my podcast, and I'm not trying to plug my podcast. He said something, and I'll reiterate it here, is that you should try to lose when you're playing practice games. I'm like, I don't understand, Tim. What do you mean? And he says you should try to play your caster as aggressive as possible. You need to find that line in the sand of, can Vlad charge this and live, or does Vlad need to cower behind? How far up can you play this caster? And if you play safe and you incrementally ratchet it up, it's going to take more games. If you play crazy aggressive, you can take those steps backwards, and it's easier to find that line where you're theoretically maximizing the amount of work your caster is doing. If you look at most of the Kadorian casters we have out there, each one of them has a high potential for self-work. And finding that line is important, and that's one of the reasons that Tim said he went 0-4, is he was really trying to push that line, see how aggressive he could be with his caster, and, you know, toned it back every time, but it allowed him to try to find that balance heading into the event. And it's something that I had never considered before. I traditionally play the conservative route, when in doubt, always camp 2, hide behind the wall, but it's an interesting way to approach the game to try to get to that line faster, if that makes sense.
No, that does. I could see that. Brad, Pete, you guys have any questions before we hop in? I don't want to necessarily do a round by round every single game, but I do certainly want to talk about the pairing and matchup process. But do you guys have anything before we hop into that?
So they published the scenarios prior to the event, and we noticed right away that Mirage was missing. And what was the other one?
Spread the Net, I think.
Yeah. So did any of you guys talk to the organizers as to why Mirage wasn't picked, or do you know?
I was told
or?
It was random scenario selection.
Okay. All right.
I assumed it wasn't since they left the two most live ones off, but maybe that is just how it randomed out. I don't know.
I figured they didn't want to go around and have to move like that obstacle that was in the middle of the table
sure.
for the flag.
I could see that.
All right. So the event. So it's a 4-round event. Going into each round, we would take... So this is something that we did every round, and it's kind of important that if you're in a team tournament, you take time to evaluate what your matchups are. So we would get our opponents' lists, walk over to the bar, sit down, talk about them for about 5-10 minutes, come back to the table, and have an idea of what we were doing.
I'm going to interrupt you real quickly, Matt. Sorry. One of the things we did ahead of time is I came to the... They did publicly announce the lists a week ahead of time, as you guys mentioned. Mm-hmm. And one of the things for me is I brought up to Tim and Matt, hey, these are lists I didn't get practice against, and I'm not 100% sure how my pair drops into them. Can you give me some advice here? One of them was Grimm, the three huge bases, Matt. I remember you coaching me with a lot of advice there. And there were a few other ones where we're like, these are things I'm just not 100% sure how I drop into. The Triple Colossal Kator list, even the mirror I had a lot of questions about. So we did discussion leading up to the event. One of the advantages to having that knowledge out there is to really leverage it. And like I said, Matt and Tim were great as to just giving me some tips and pointers on how to play into the things. And once I have an idea, it kind of makes sense and came together on the table for me. But anyway, keep going, Matt.
So before every game, we kind of would talk through the matchups, figure out where we want to be, and like figure out who we wanted to drop first and kind of get their ideal matchup out of the way. Then like a lot of that was predicting and like reading who their strong players were. So like that was kind of hard round one. You can't like no one has wins on their thing yet. We don't really know what people played. So you're just going off feeling and, you know, and just trying to protect your players as best you can. We ended up, I believe, 3-0 round one.
Correct.
So we ended up 3-0 round one. There were a lot of really good games. I know I personally played Armored Core round one. Sung, you played?
I played Vlad 1 to Scar 3, and Tim ended up playing Zerkovan to Krios 3.
Okay, cool. So I'll just go right into round two. Round two, we played against... what were the three lists? We got...
I ended up playing Vlad 1 to Iris 2 IFP. You played Old Witch into Jaga Jaga. Tim played Butcher 3 into Kogrima.
So interesting things about this is that when we went into the matchup process for this, we kind of had some soft dodges here. We were like, I don't really want to play this matchup. I'm not sure how it goes. I don't know if my damage potential is enough to kill the impervious flesh swamp horrors. I don't know if I'm going to get shot off the table by the pie plates, all of that stuff. We ended up 3-0-ing this one as well, I believe.
You are correct.
And I think going into every round, our solution was just shoot rockets at it. If rockets don't work, play your other list.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask. So you say you have some soft dodge. I was just curious, did the matchups just fall into the way that you wanted and you just didn't have to worry about that? Or did you go with that plan?
We just went with the rocket plan. So, like, we were rocket men, so to speak. our plan was essentially before the event, like this went down to even picking Winterguard Command. We were like, just play a list that sweeps as hard as it can. Like, it's Winterguard Command. It's the hardest sweeper in Kador. We're like, let's play that. And if that doesn't work, then I guess like play a list that is good and pivots. And every round we did that, it succeeded, right? So going on to round three, this is a round where I got my first loss.
Circling back to round two, one of the things that I personally was dodging, just for example, I really didn't want to play into Davis's Kogrim or Grimm matchup personally. I didn't have a lot of confidence into it. It's one of the things I mentioned earlier. I had questions about leading into the event. And with the amount of repetitions I had, just wasn't something I was super excited about dropping into. So that's an example of something that I didn't feel comfortable with. That being said, if I did play into it, I think I have game. I have a strategy for it. So I'm not like hard dodging, hard knowing it. But it's just one of those things that we thought we could end up in a better situation. The other thing I'll say is leading into it, there's definitely a bit of metagaming here, right? Matt's a known player. Tim's a very known player. And I said before, like, I'm the worst player in the team. And that plays into the other team and how they pair a little bit. Do they want to go heads up with Tim Banky and Matt, or do they want to put their strongest player into me, kind of maximizing their odds of getting a win? And I don't know what the other individual teams are thinking, but there's some metagaming into it again.
Sure.
And like that was
going. Like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
You know, Sung is
being really diplomatic here, but I by far know that you're a better player than Matt is. You keep putting yourself down, and like after the fourth time, I just wanted to make sure I stood up for you. Matt is kind of herp-derping his way to these victories through conventions, but I know through it, like game through and through, Sung, you are the more technically skilled player than Matt is. I mean, just from talking with you, I know it 100%.
We can get into that later. The one thing I do jab Matt periodically is I did qualify for War Machine Weekend before him, and I'm fairly certain I'm still a higher seed than him, but we can get into that later.
Oh, shit.
Oh, hashtag shots fired. I mean, I make no claims about how good I am. That's all Sung Soo. Also, Brad, you're terrible. See, you're terrible.
I know.
Sung Soo brought up an interesting point about metagaming, and this was definitely something that came up in round three. Round three, we played against Trophy Husbands, which was Keith's team, Keith Christensen, and before we kind of went into the pairing process, I 100%, I was like, Keith is going to pair himself against Sung Soo. That's his plan. He's going to get himself the best matchup there that he can for his team, and then he's going to let his two other guys try to get wins on their side. And that actually like ended up happening 100%. Like essentially the predicted pair up happened. Tim played against a Trolls player. I played against the Kator Mir, and Sung Soo played against Keith Christensen. Now some interesting things about this matchup. This was my loss. My only loss was to another Kator player in the Kator Mir. I played against Irusk 2 with double Ulans, and I shot rockets and rockets and rockets and killed nothing, and it was bad. Sung Soo won his game against Keith Christensen playing Armored Core into Denny 1 Slaughter Fleet. And Tim won his game against the troll player. His name escapes me right now.
Jake Quimby.
And he played Butcher 3 into Grim.
Correct. Grim 2. Into
Grim 2 and with double huge bases.
I'm sorry. I wasn't looking at the list. Grim 2...
Yeah, it's Grim 2 War Wagons. Yeah.
Okay. So interesting things about this round. I thought my matchup was good for me. My opponent thought the matchup was good for me as well. And I ended up losing that, so that was a thing that happened. Keith thought the matchup was good for him. I felt Sung Soo was favored in the matchup. Being familiar with both Krix and Kator in this matchup, I felt like Vlad 2 had a really good game. Sung Soo ended up winning this game in a very cool way of killing Denegra 1 with a Dracoon.
Nice. Now, I was on the fence, but I think that confirms he's the better player between the two of you. So, I'm with Brad now.
Hashtag confirmed. And then Tim won his game versus Grim 2 when Grim 2 went all in on the assassination run on Butcher, forgetting that Butcher had Sack Pawn Winterguard.
Ouch.
So that round played out interesting. So I'm in the middle table here. I am the cream to this white vanilla Oreo. And I look to my left, and Matt's playing, and he's like, I need fives to hit. And I'm like, cool, that sounds good. Fives is pretty good. And I look over, and I don't know what's happening in Tim's game, but he's just taking all of the table. And I'm like, well, that seems like it's going okay as well. And then I kind of focus on Keith again. And my goal for this is just play Keith well. Like, if Keith Christensen beats me, there's zero shame in that. It's Keith Christensen. So I look back, and then Matt's like, I'm not going to say the word tilted, but Matt's not pleased with the way his dice played out. And I still look over, Tim's still conquering most of the table. And, I mean, do you want to say what happened in your game, Matt?
So I played against David Bingham Brown, the creator of Conflict Chamber. And it was a really good game. I shot aiming rockets at Ulans and missed 7 out of 9 rockets. And also 3 of those were Joad. Let's talk about that for a second. I then shot, like, I shot my entire army at Ulans and killed 3 out of the 10. Super good. That's including rifles and everything. He then killed my entire army. And then to get back in the game, my victor had to punch its way into the zone. And it missed 3 out of 5 times, needing 6s. It was just a really unfortunate like thing, and like I could have played it better. And so this is a really big moment for me as a player. In this game, I definitely tilted. After the top of two, where I just missed everything, I could have taken a second and been critical of my play and reflected on it and walked away from the table and came back with a renewed like perspective on the game. But instead, I just like doubled down and was like, well, Gambler's Fallacy's got my back, and charged right in there. And that was a mistake. I ended up losing, but luckily Sung-Soo and Tim carried us through that round. We were able to close out that round. This leads us to the finals versus, what was their team name?
Already Tilted.
Already Tilted, which is what I certainly was.
Perfect.
So, interesting thing about this finals game, I know Blake on the team really, really well. I've seen him at a lot of cons. We talk on Facebook occasionally. He's a really cool dude. And I've definitely talked through some matchups with him. We go into the pairing process, and I have a little bit of trauma for my last Kador game. So there's another iRisk 2 list in front of me, and I'm like, I don't really want to play this. I think I'm just going to miss all those fives again, and I'm probably just going to throw the table. I decide to man up, so to speak, to next level, to grow up, to be an adult, and be like, all right, I'm going to play this matchup. So we go into the pairing process. We get Sung-Soo versus Mailock. So this is Vlad 1 versus Mailock. We get Tim with Zirkova 1 versus Magnus 2. And I get Butcher 1 Armored Core with versus Irisk. Sorry, I get versus Irisk 2. I fucked that all up.
Round 4, Tim, we ended up with Vlad 1 into Mailock. That was my own game. Matt ended up playing Butcher into Irisk 2 IFP. That's Butchered Armored Core. And then Tim ended up playing his Zirkova list into Magnus 2.
There we go. Thanks. So interesting things about this. This is essentially the matchups we wanted. Sung-Soo was a little bit concerned about playing into Gators. I was certain that Recon 2 would be slow enough that it would be fine. I probably didn't do a good job explaining what needed to happen in this matchup. This was probably a knowledge deficit issue.
So we were playing on Recon 2, in the interest of full disclosure, and I felt pretty good into the Mailock. I was more worried if he dropped Rask, how that would play out. And then, honestly, I just executed extremely. And I'm not taking... Sorry, let me back up. Blake played very well. Blake beat me. I'm not taking anything away from that. I like Blakey a lot, and I will certainly give everything I have next time I play him. Blake played very well. That being said, I made several misplays that ultimately ended with me losing rather early. And it was a very uncomfortable situation. I certainly didn't want to lose. No one ever does. But I definitely ended early enough to the point where I couldn't tell who was winning or even favored in the other two games. And it wasn't a great feeling.
Sure.
So talking about my own game, I played Butcher 1 versus Irisk 2. And I had a little bit of trauma from my last round where I played Old Witch and Irisk 2. And I was a little bit bothered. So I was like, you know what? We're going to play the Armored Core list here. We'll see how this goes. Feeling confident, I'm pretty comfortable with Kador, pretty comfortable with that matchup, and Recon 2 is a good scenario for me. The cool beats of that matchup were Suppression Fire is really good against Iron Fang Pikemen. They can't really do anything unless they want to take a Pow 10. I kind of controlled where he could go the entire game, and then just like did stuff with the rest of my army. I put two tankers in control of his army, and then traded other models for his guys. The game culminated with a shock trooper one-shotting Irisk 2 from charging him in the back. Just a casual 17 for damage.
Seems fine.
Yeah,
it's no big deal.
I would have won on scenario in the next two turns anyways. I'm not too concerned, but it was cool. Tim's game was a really cool game. Magnus 2 with 5 nomads and 5 units. So they just move up aggressively, take a lot of table space. They're battle group models, so Recon 2 is a pretty live scenario for them. And he's playing Zirkova, so he kind of advances up behind a cloud wall. And Tim spends the early turns of the game scalpeling out bucklers on the nomads to reduce their armor with his precision strike and kind of make them easier to deal with later on in the game. So he does that to like a bunch of the nomads, and then he gets like really good counter charges in a couple turns, and he's just able to kind of attrition models even during Magnus's feet turn using cute counter charges and like righteous vengeances to get out of righteous vengeance on Sofia Skorova to get out of Magnus's feet.
Yeah, that was a sweet move Tim did. So he counter charged with Sofia laterally. Let's say he couldn't move north or west, so he charged east, right? Hits a model, he had already triggered Righteous Vengeance. He Righteous Vengeance is out of Magnus' 2's feet and then charges right back in. It was a pretty incredible play.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's cool.
Well, so like the lateral charge got him out of the feet. That was the big part of it.
No,
so
he had the Righteous...
No, you can't Righteous Vengeance. No, you can't Righteous Vengeance out of it. Because it's an advance.
You can Righteous Vengeance out of his feet.
Oh, yeah, see, you're right. So yeah, you're right.
He charges Righteous Vengeance out of the feet. Then when Sophia starts her activations, out of the feet isn't under the feet restrictions and can charge back in.
Correct. Add another point to Sunny.
Yep.
Matt still zero.
In the interest of full disclosure, I think this might be one of us takes notes before a podcast and one of us doesn't, more so than anything else.
That's fine. That's not how we do it here.
Prepared. Another point.
It was a really close game, really tight, really interesting. Interesting component of that game is Zerkova's feet stops power attacks. So he went up with a freebooter to punch up a juggernaut and went to grab and smash it, which gets stopped by Zerkova's feet. Cool times. Anyways, so we ended up winning that round. 2-1. It was a really good round. I really liked all of the games I played during the event. We get our medals, and we kind of hang out and shoot the shit with all the people there. It was a really good event. Definitely looking to attend next year. Sungsu, do you have any notes on this?
No, it was a great event. The one thing I'll say, I know Tim mentioned the kind of the turning point in his game, is he managed to get all three Great Bears countercharging onto a Nomad, and they just wrecked it. And he said that was kind of a turning point in the end of the game. It was a really interesting game to look at because there were just tons of Nomads on the table, but you didn't realize how crippled they were. Tim really did great work with Precision Strike, like we mentioned before, in those Ulans.
One thing I saw, I think you guys said online, is kind of more going back to the lists, was that you went with the pivot sweeper concept, you took a more traditional steamroller pairing for each of you, as opposed to, and I know because it's a little different style team tournament, like, you know, you get into some of the other ones and you go, all right, you build this list because we're in tech here, but I thought it was interesting that you guys kind of just took three steamroller pairs and went with that.
So I think that building lists for a team composition has a couple ways you can approach it, but I definitely feel like building good pairings that are really strong and don't have a lot of weaknesses, so you don't need to be protected a bunch, is the way you handle team tournaments. You definitely don't want to be in a situation where you go to a pairing and your opponents and you're like, I need to be protected from these five matchups, and your team's just like, that's half the game, we can't protect you from that. That's just not a viable strategy. So the best thing you could possibly do is build a strong pairing that has as few weaknesses as possible and solves as many problematic matchups as possible.
Sure. Brad, Pete?
I have a question kind of for the both of you, for Kator in general. And it's kind of specifically related to the sweeper pivot mentality. With the pivot list, kind of the common complaints you kind of hear when you go through the different Facebook groups or Discord chats for Kator is the things I was kind of joking about before, their problems with stealth and incorporeal. Those answers exist within Kator, but are usually tied to like higher point packages, Ironhole of Valachev or Spriggan in your battle group, whereas other factions might have them kind of incidentally in the models they're already looking to bring. You know, magic weapons on Tix Traders, for example, or just models of the Isle of Sight, like a gun mage in Signar. Just insert whatever other faction options exist. Is it tougher to build a pivot list within Kator? Because the ability to get the options to make a pivot list able to play in anything cost more in general.
So the way I like to explain Kator to people, and it's the way I think about it in general, is Kator is like a bowling ball down a track. It just goes really heavily one direction. You can't really make it turn left. You can't make it really turn right. It's just rolling down that track. That's its strength. It's the biggest bowling ball you could have. So, like, typically it doesn't have a lot of flex options. That's why they're expensive. That doesn't mean you can't build pivot lists. That doesn't mean it's even hard to build pivot lists. It just means the way you build pivot lists is really different, and it comes down to learning to play matchups with kits you already have with a little bit of added tech. So, like, as an example, I keep talking about rockets. Rockets solve a lot of problems. You're like, oh, that's an entire stealth infantry army. Well, I guess I just deviate blasts on it. That's fine. Oh, that's, you know, like, there's a whole mess of things that just being guns solves. And then when you add in, like, a Victor for flare or magic weapons via Ayana and Holt, now you're flexible enough that, you know, you can flex onto things that you wouldn't expect, that you could pivot in ways that you wouldn't expect. And it's certainly true of things like Armored Core, which through their durability and like surprising speed and damage output, allow you to play matchups you wouldn't expect them to be able to. So I don't think it's necessarily harder to build a pivot list. I think it's more specific. You have to have a better idea of what you're doing. Does that make sense?
I think so.
The other thing I'll say, just kind of building on to that, sorry to interrupt you, Brad, is, yeah, the options you have are expensive, right? The Victor is an expensive way to get flare, but the Victor does a lot of other things, right? It's not like you're literally taking this Victor just to drop flare every turn. He can test extremely well. He can punt something very well. He actually has really respectable shooting output when you factor in the smaller guns. So there's a lot more he can do. Ayana and Holt are expensive when you tack on...
Valjev.
Thank you so much. Valjev onto him. But that's, you're one of the only factions that has the option to do that. Being able to grant Kiss out there on top of rockets is incredible, especially when you factor in signs of importance. So I'm bringing tools to provide answers with things. And again, Matt made these lists. I'm just speaking from experience playing them. But it's not like they're only in there in case there's something I need magic weapons for. They're doing work every turn into every matchup, regardless of whether they're there to answer the specific stealth matchup, to answer the specific incorporeal answer. So yes, they're expensive tools, but it's not a unitasker. It's closer to a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, I mean, not just that. I mean, Holt will do work every turn. They're a unit. They score a zone. They score zones. Like, they're just money. They're great every game.
Absolutely. And yep. Holt plus Kiss plus signs importance. He does the Lord's work with pistols.
And I think another thing that he kind of touched on is that you want to take these things because they're good. Like, Ion and Holt provide you a tool, sure, but they always are good. Like, there's never a situation where they do nothing. And, like, a lot of people, when they talk about Kador and talk about its problems, they don't want to pay the tax. Like, they don't want to pay the Valachev tax. They don't want to pay the Ion and Holt tax. They don't want to pay for a Victor. And, like, that's just a very unhealthy way to approach list building. If you purposely hamstring yourself before you set out to play the game, of course you're going to do poorly. Like, I know Jaws of the Wolf is a very popular list in North America, but, like, there's a reason that theme doesn't win events, right? Like, it's very specific, and it has very specific problems. And if you're not building it in a way that allows you to win the matchups you need to win with it, you're shooting yourself in the foot before you even get to race. Like, build strong lists, play strong pairings, and then decide if your faction struggles with things, and adjust where you need to adjust to succeed. No one's sitting here being like, well, I'm going to play 20 points down and then complain about losing, right?
So just to kind of play devil's advocate for the other side here, is it poor design maybe on the point of the theme forces, kind of all of them except for Wolves of Winter and Jaws to an extent as well a little bit? Is it poor design to force the, three out of the five theme forces to take their Merc unit selection in order to have the option for these tools in any form or fashion available to them?
I mean, that's where a lot of factions are, right? Like, a lot of factions need to flex into their Merc slots for options. What you have with Kador is that they play a very strong, aggressive attrition game, and they attrition really, really well. The counterpoint to that is they lack a lot of flexibility within their themes. So having even the ability to take some flexibility should be seen as a boon. Like, I was winning events with Kador and, like, doing really well before I had magic weapons. Like, I was playing against Scar 1 and, like, with no Ayana and Holt and trying to figure out that matchup.
You just totally did it back in my day, just for the record.
I mean, that's fine. Back in my day, we didn't even have models. So, no, I mean, like, just like the thing, like, when themes first came out, you didn't have access to Mercs, so playing Winterguard to Command into Krix was a really big struggle, but you had to do it. And, like, you found ways to play around that matchup. It's the same thing with like modern Kator. Now you have flexibility where you didn't have it before. Is it bad design? I don't know. I'm not an expert. I'm not qualified to speak on that. I feel like it's good enough that it works. And I think that's where you need to be. I don't know.
The only thing I'll add on to that is I personally, I don't feel like it's bad design. We do have, if let's just use the magic weapon, for example. We can take Ariana on hold. And that I understand why it seems like a tax. That being said, Valtiv does things that most factions don't have an opportunity with Ariana on hold. You have the longest threat range for a Kiss in the game right now. I believe it's even farther than the Legion Ice Witches or whatever those people are called. I forgive me for misquoting their names there. But that Zephyr can matter. Zephyr can also help keep Ariana and Holt safe. I can't tell you the number of times Holt aimed and then Zephyred into position to shoot something or Zephyred back to stay a little bit safer. Also, in that particular Vlad list I was playing, Signs of Portents on top of Kiss really lands it. I can't tell you the amount of times I was playing a Merc list and Ariana misses the Kiss. And I'm like, okay, this is really bad. I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm very math-based in my approach to things, and not having that plus two damage can really make a difference. Valchev opens that up. Valchev makes them better, and he costs 4 points to do so. Yes, a 50% increase on the unit, but he provides options. The other thing I'll say is 5 out of the 6 scenarios have objectives now. We can use that objective again to leverage the magic weapon. When we talk about that combined with a Victor, right? That's a huge base that has to be within 4 inches of an objective. It's not that difficult. The Vector can still get other places he needs to be to drop that giant 5-inch AoE. So I don't think it's bad design. That being said, I do think it's clear the Privateer Press has this in mind, and they're kind of designing the Steamroller pack and the solos to offset it as well. Tons of Hordes factions end up having to tech into Fish Stick in order to do the same thing. Is the Fish Stick cheaper? Absolutely. But what does the Fish Stick do if he's not granting it? Doesn't grant you near the flexibility or the usefulness that Ariana holds. Again, that's just my opinion. But personally, I don't feel like it's bad design. I get never liking to be shoehorned into something, and I think that's a lot of people's resentment. They feel like we have to take something, and that's not a good feeling. We should do different things. That being said, the choice we do have, I think, is a very valid choice and a very powerful choice.
So is it just me, or is Sung's audio cutting out a little bit?
He cut out just a little, but I think we got the gist of it, and I totally agree. I mean, I and Signar, I can take Murdoch and put them on Ayana and Holt, and I can't tell you how many times I'd rather have the distance and being able to Zephyr away instead of having the go to ground, because distance, you know, distance trumps stats. And I find myself taking them as well for the same reasons, although for us it's more because we need harm in Gravediggers more than but the magic weapons also. But it's a similar thing. I mean, I end up taking the mercs, them in my, as my merc slot half the time anyway. But like you said, compared to Fish Sticks, they do work. They are present in every game.
So
order, if Fish Sticks isn't handing out guidance, he's making a sweet ass cloud.
Got it. He's blocking line of sight to the back line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Neat.
So to kind of keep going with this train of thought, we talked a little bit, or I shouldn't say a little bit, but kind of at length now about magic weapons, in that Ayana can give them out. You can get them from the objective. And I will say that I agree with both yourself. Well, I say yourself. I'm saying Matt because I can see you in the webcam. But I agree with Matt and Sung. That the options are more than enough, but to keep playing the devil's advocate so that we're not all just echo chambering each other here, your answers to stealth, you kind of both have hinted at and alluded to being the Victor with his 5-inch pie plate of flare. We've also kind of briefly mentioned the Spriggan, but I think to Sung's point, I was saying people don't like the feeling of being shoehorned into things. When we look at most other factions, ability to answer stealth. So I'll go to Crix first because I know it offhand. We have Dirt Seers. It's a relatively inexpensive unit, and you get multiple instances of it. You have Fish Sticks for all of Hordes at 4 points that gives out Eyeless Sight to ignore stealth. You have the Arcane Tempest Gun Mage in Signar, as well as a handful of models that ignore stealth in Signar in general.
Yep.
By and large, options that are far cheaper than a 17-point heavy or a colossal that will take the entirety of a Warcaster's Warjack points. Is having those options to remove stealth at a cheaper rate a valid complaint for Kator players to have?
So back when I used to play Kator very competitively, and it was the one faction that I mained,
Back in my day. Go ahead.
When I only played Kador as my main faction, I used to complain about not being able to solve stealth. That was actually a real thing. I was like, man, this sucks. I don't want to take a Victor because it's super expensive and like occupies all these things. I could have like five heavies instead. It's three heavies. But realistically, like you make the call. Is having those tools worth it? Can you win the matchup without them? And like the answer usually is yes, by the way. Like you can totally win all of the matchups we talked about with three Marauders instead of a Victor. They're all playable. It's just we decided that having the toolbox was more valuable than having three Marauders. I think that realistically at the end of the day, you have to make the decision. Like, how valuable is the tool for you? Is it worth the 34-point Colossal? Like, besides the Colossal does a lot of work and it's great, is having your rockets not be limited by stealth good? And I think that we occupy like a really weird area where every faction has undergone massive theme CIDs and has gained a lot of models. And Kador themes are restrictive and they're narrow. And it feels like to people, especially people who only play Jaws, it feels like they don't have options. But that's just not true. Like we talked about the Victor already. We talked about Iona and Holt. We talked about the Spriggan. You can also play a list like Wolves of Winter. That's a good, fine theme. Like it does well. You can also play casters that give you solves. Like, you're like, oh, I don't have solves for magic weapons. Karchev's Feet does it for your battle group. Oh, I need a solve for stealth. Well, melee weapons ignore stealth anyways. There's a lot of things that are fine, and the game isn't in a place right now where you can have a solve for everything in your pairing. You have to end up playing skill matches, not silver bullets. And I think that's a really big subject people are uncomfortable with, is that we all want to win games at the list building phase. Like, I'm guilty of this, Sung's guilty of this, you all are guilty of this, every player is.
Fuck you, you don't know me.
Wow, coming here with strong words, another point for Sung. Accusing the hosts, how dare you?
We all want to win games before we play them, right? Like, you when you look at a list pair and you're like, man, I have a list he can't solve. It feels really good, and you play that game in a tournament because you want to win. But that's just not where War Machine is anymore. We're not in a place where you can win every game at list selection. And you have to accept that you're going to have to play some skill matchups, and you're going to have to win hard games. And that's how War Machine is. I recently won a Masters, and I played, over the course of the weekend, over 11 games, 11 games? 12 games? I played 6 matchups that were at best 50-50 against players who are almost certainly better than me, and I managed to win them. And that's how War Machine is now. You just have to accept that you're going to have bad matchups, and you have to win those bad matchups.
Well, I think one thing now with the CIDs and the dynamic updates coming out so frequently, we're in such a place with the parity where you can't, like you said, you can't tech for everything. You're not going to have a two-list pairing that just answers every single list. You know what you're going to drop, and either one's a slam dunk into what you need to play. Like, that doesn't exist in Mark III in Theme Machine. Themes and the CIDs have made it where that just isn't realistic. You can minimize it, but it's going to come down to the familiarity with the matchup with your list and that list itself, and having reps and knowing the moving pieces and what's important in that list and your path to victory.
So the way I talk about this to people when I'm trying to help them out is like I refer to it the knowledge discrepancy, or the knowledge deficiency. So like when I play Denny 2 in a convention, I can win those games because the people I'm playing against aren't as familiar with Denny 2's kit as I am. So like when we get into a game, it gives me a lot of possibilities to win a game on avenues that my opponent can't predict or doesn't have the tools to predict. And then like even if they can't predict that, you still get to play a game because you're still playing a game of War Machine. And I think that's even more true as we play an army like Kador. Kador has a lot of really weird things where you're like, well, do these three rockets kill this heavy? Well, probably not, but maybe it closes out the cortex. And, like, now you have to play a different game. Oh, do these pikemen with precision strike and countercharge? Oh, I forgot about countercharge. Oh, I guess I die. All of those little steps gives you outs into matchups you don't think you can win. And, like, that's what War Machine is. It's not about building a list that's silver bullets every single matchup. It's about building a list pair that has a really strong sweeper where you're like, I can win all of these matchups where this is good, and then having a list that allows you to play matchups that are unwinnable for that the other list. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about having you talk to Brandon about Pivot Sweeper. I think that would be sweet.
Why are you thinking about him right now? Is he your love interest? You miss him?
It was just a joke that didn't go over well because he didn't like that concept. So that
Forgot about that.
Yeah, that was all. But, you know.
Sung, any thoughts on what Matt said?
Yeah, I mean, Matt said a lot. back to the initial question.
Pick your least favorite part and talk about that.
back to your initial question. Like, stealth is a valuable ability. I don't think any faction should trivially be able to ignore it, because stealth is something we pay a point cost for, regardless of what that point cost might be. I think it's important to think about what models we're trying to ignore stealth on, and I think it's important to remember that Kador's options are faction agnostic. The models that you listed, barring the fish stick, are all limited to single faction things, right? The Dirgeseers can only be in Slaughter Fleet. The Arcane Tempest Gunmage can only be in that theme that's named alludes me at this moment.
Sons of the Tempest.
Right, thank you very much. So those are limited things. We can take the Spriggan everywhere. We can take the Victor everywhere. So there are definitely options for it. I get the options might not be as good as other places, but if you wanted to play a game that was fully balanced, right, then unfortunately War Machine's not going to be it. And cross-faction comparisons, I get, will naturally happen, but it's clear that Kador has the options to deal with these things. Whether we like the options or not, like, these are the options we have. And in my opinion, the options are very viable in order to get the job.
Pete, what do you got? I know you got some more questions.
Man, it's, I don't.
Well, shit.
Oh, okay. No, wait. I do. All right. So you guys went out. You played four games with these lists. Would you revise your lists based off of the games that you played?
So I would drop the Victor out of my old witch list to be three Marauders. That would be the first change I would make. I'd probably get room for a fourth Marauder by cutting some solos. The Victor is a really hard piece to play two huge bases. It kind of slows down your scenario play a lot. It's a great piece, and it provided me with solves for matchups, but I don't think that removing stealth is as important as I thought it was initially going in. I also felt like mortars were probably good enough to solve the other matchups I needed them to solve. Plus, Marauders trade aggressively, even at 11 points.
Is that you reflecting on those matches particularly, or going forward if you were to play that pair?
Going forward, if I were to play that.
Okay. All right. Just checking.
The Butcher 1 list is great. I would not change it.
Matt said something that I want to hit on real quickly is it's easy to focus on the things that your faction can't do well. Like, do those questions matter? Like, does it matter that Kador has a difficult time dealing with stealth? And I don't want to answer that in the podcast. I think that'll take a long time. But, like, does it really matter? Think about the matchups you're going to see. Think about the dominant meta matchups. Think about where stealth is going to matter against you, and then honestly decide whether it's going to matter, and you can make a decision like Matt did. I don't think it's going to matter. I'm going to drop my stealth solution. Or I do think it's going to matter. I'm going to keep it in the list. That being said, I really, really, really love that Vlad 2 list. All credit to Matt for making it. It was a lot of fun to play. I really enjoyed it. I don't think I'd change anything there. Vlad 1, I'm going to be a little bit negative on Kador right now, and forgive me. Vlad 1, while very effective, is not terribly enjoyable to play. And for that reason, if I was going to make a steamroller pair that I was going to grind for a while, I might end up pivoting off him, to use that word slightly differently than Matt uses it, and find another pair. But as far as the effectiveness of the list, if my goal was just to win games, then Vlad 1 is extremely powerful. Just personally speaking, I don't know if I could play that for 50 to 100 games and continue bringing it around to events.
Is it just that he is a signs importance bot and that's it? Or was there something else to Vlad 1?
I think some of it is what you said. He is assigned an important spot. And to my earlier point about playing him more aggressively, Vlad can get work done. It's just kind of finding that balancing line about how much work he can and can't get done and what you feel comfortable with. The other thing is just, and I know you guys have talked about it on your podcast and Matt's talked about it, is finding a caster that exemplifies the way you want to play the game. I don't really want to just shoot things, get down in scenario, and hope it goes long enough for me to go back in. Whenever you're up on attrition, it forces your opponents to do things that tend to be riskier, and sometimes those things work out, whether that's an assassination, whether that's a long Hail Mary going for 3 or 4 control points in a turn. And personally, I don't like doing that. I'd rather play a closer game, if that makes sense. I didn't personally enjoy the way that it played. Again, very efficient. He's great at what he does. It just didn't personally match my style. I hope that makes sense.
No, yep. It absolutely does. And that, I think that's one of the important keys here is you said, you know, I don't want to be negative, but you now quantified your opinion on it. And I understand, you know, I can say, yes, all right, I can see why Vlad 1's not enjoyable for you to play based off of what you said.
Can I say one thing to get away from Kato real quick that kind of echoes with Sung?
Sure.
Is it going to be about Krix?
I thought it was going to be about playstyle.
I don't enjoy playing Scar 1.
Right, and that's I played Krix for a while too, and I didn't enjoy playing Scar 1 either. Dark Guidance, Feet, Stalkers, do I win? No, okay, I guess I'll keep playing. And that's not to belittle Brandon Andrews, but, I mean, we can belittle Brandon Andrews. It's just, for me, I just didn't enjoy playing that style of game. And for everyone in War Machine, Matt said it before, and I think it's a great quote, it's very rare that your first faction will be, quote-unquote, your faction. It takes a little while to get used to it and playing the game to really nail down what you enjoy playing. And Matt can speak much more eloquently about this than I can.
I mean, I can. You kind of hit the nail on the head, though. I shuffled through a lot of factions personally, and it took me a long time to settle on something that felt good. And even after I did find something that felt good and felt like my playstyle, I still wanted to explore and try other things. And I feel like nailing yourself down to any one thing diminishes your total enjoyment of the game, unless that one thing is all you can think about and is all you belong to. It's good to play the game. It's good to have fun. It's good to win, but it's also good to lose. It's also good to do a lot of things. And the most important thing when you play War Machine, the most important thing when you play this game is to have a good time while you do it. If that means you play a new faction every week, if that means you play a new caster every week, if that means that you play really weird lists, as long as you know, have fun doing it and, you know, keep your expectations realistic. That is the best way to approach the game. As far as developing a playstyle goes, every person has a way they want to play the game. There's a lot of interesting ways to play the game, and I'm sure I've talked about this before, and I'm almost certainly going to talk about it again, but there is a very specific bracket of ways competitive players play, and those playstyles have ramifications or indications to the casters you want to play and the factions you tend to gravitate to. And identifying that and identifying what's fun to you is super important.
Brad, play style.
Yeah, no, they exist.
So the last thing I want to say, if I could, is a lot of I guess I asked you a question. I didn't wait for you to respond, but I think you guys would interrupt me. There's a lot of people on Facebook groups, either for Circle or Kador, say all the quote-unquote national players stop playing my faction. I think we've all seen those posts. And the one thing I'll say to that is, like, I wouldn't worry about it. Before this year, I quote-unquote wasn't a national player, and then literally it took me traveling nationally to become one. That's all it is. You just have to go out there and travel. Like, if you see a hole in the meta, if you see something you can fill, if you see a gap in a faction, you're more than empowered to step up and do it. This time a year ago, I was the worst person on our team, no one knew who I was. But now people know me, and it just took getting out there and traveling and to get out there and to establish yourself. So just because people aren't doing something, just because you don't have the reassurance of a known quantity playing what you're playing, doesn't mean what you're playing is bad. It just means it's unproven. And there's certainly nothing stopping you from going out there and proving it, to sussing it out, to providing validity to the theory that you present.
Well, and you don't know why they even stopped playing it. It could be a new caster came out of CID that they were just super in love with and were like, this fits me, I want to play this. I mean, there's reasons for people swapping factions, and it's not always that it's bad, quote-unquote.
Absolutely.
I mean,
100% agree.
I mean, that's literally why I stopped playing Kador. Denny 2 came out of CID, and I was like, this is the coolest shit I've ever seen. I'm going to play this. And here I am.
And Matt, I think you know, like, why did Bubba pivot off for a little while?
Well, because Bubba played Kador for years, and he wanted a break from playing the same faction for his entire career.
Right, so it's not always, again, I think we're all saying the same thing. It's not necessarily because the faction's bad. It's just people want something else, and they're more than entitled to. Like Matt said, we all play the game to have fun. So if you're not enjoying something, go play something else. But really, just because a national, quote-unquote, player isn't doing it, that really doesn't mean anything, in my opinion.
I agree.
All right, guys, we got anything else, or are we going to we want to call it? I think there was a lot in there. That was a really good run-through of your guys' list and the event itself. Brad, Pete?
I got nothing.
I'm right there with nothing.
All right, perfect. Well, Sung, Matt, thank you guys for coming on. It was a pleasure. That was awesome to listen to and to just a lot of information there, but it was all great. Congrats on the win. And again, you can check Sung out on Munis on Minis and Matt as
Actually,
well.
One more thing before we go.
Sure.
Matt, Pete, for the Boker Brawl, any chance that you do a five-man Kador team?
I have the models.
Does
so
Pete,
do I.
Does Pete?
So do I.
I'm not ruling it out.
Pete, the Soretti 3 played all three played Kador at one Steamroller one time, all off Pete's collection.
For a five-man event, would we be comfortable maybe going, like, three Kador to Retribution?
I don't know, man. Retribution's, with the new fancy CID, and even where it currently is, I don't know if that's fair to everyone else.
Was that the end of Mark II that we did that, Brad?
Yeah, it was. I think it was your last Mark II event, wasn't it?
Yeah, so, quick story. For the longest time, we kept joking that we have enough Kador that all three of us, myself, my wife, and my son, could go to an event with Kador. And so the very last one, we did it in Mark II. So we let my wife, Trish, have first dibs because it was her faction. So she picked hers, and then I let my son pick. And I ended up with Butcher 2 and Butcher 2 and Sorcia 2. And so we showed up at the tournament, and everyone was like, all of you are playing Kador? That's nuts. And so the universe rewarded us by making each one of us fight in subsequent rounds. So we all got paired up against each other. So we're never doing that again.
just on a real point, you could do a five-man Kador team. The faction is wide enough that you could build 10 independent lists that are all strong in the meta.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, we were all looking for a way to fit Sorcia 2 or Rust 2 into our pair. And it's not that they were bad. It's just for Sorcia 3, we all felt we kind of wanted chariots and none of us owned them. Rust 2 certainly isn't bad. It was just, again, we kind of had spin-up time. This isn't our main factions. And the closing thing I want to say about it is I really enjoyed playing Kador. I borrowed most of my army from my meta here in Colorado, and they were phenomenal with it. But I did end up buying a lot of the Manowar stuff, and I actually plan on buying and filling out some Armored Core lists because they were really fun. I do think they are very competitive, and I look forward to the opportunity to play them more.
You heard it here first. All right. I think that's it. Five-man team tournament. Five-man Bokor Brawl team, all Kador. Lock it up.
I think you could do it. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to hear about it. But, hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
No problem, man. Thanks a lot. Look forward to hearing more from you guys on your cast. And for all of us here, I'm Grant.
I'm still Brad.
And I'm Pete.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Thank you for joining Fully Boosted. This is episode 89 of the Fully Boosted War Machine and Hordes podcast. Today I'm joined by our normal hosts. Pete?
Grant, that's when you say your name.
Sorry. This has never happened before. I'm Grant.
No.
I'm Brad.
I'm Pete.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Sung Soo.
I don't think that worked.
No.
It's fine. All right, let's do it the normal way then.
All right.
I knew what you were going for, Matt. I was like, come on, Grant. Come on.
It's fine. I'll just save all of this and add it on to the end. It'll be great.